Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we'll be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comic sales for January 2016 through Diamond to retailers. And, you know, as is usual, they have stuff on store shelves. This is sell-in information, not sell-through information. The usual caveats abound. We're doing this a little later in the month than normal. I got a little sick after going up to a convention, so, you know, them's the breaks.
Hey, but there were shows to fill and some really good ones that filled in that time. And just
oh, yeah.
We haven't. You haven't missed a Monday, Wednesday, Friday in quite a while.
Almost a month. Almost a year, actually.
Yeah.
Back in April last year. It takes some doing, but hopefully people are enjoying the episodes and such. So, you know, for January 2016, Januarys are usually not so great months in terms of sales. You know, it's the start of the new year. People have spent a lot of money for the holidays and whatnot. So to see things go down, not unusual. And this was a slightly below average month, just kind of in general. But it's interesting kind of where that was happening, because for DC, it was down. Matter of fact, it was like the fifth worst month they've had on record.
Yep.
The most recent, you know, month that was worse than this goes back to January 2011. No, actually, May 2011. Of the four other worst months, January 2011, February and March of 2009, and January of 2004. Now, DC is averaging about 2,351,207 units in the top 300. And this time around, they had 1,651,574 units. So, noticeably below.
Yep.
They, of course, came in as the second highest percentage of the top 300, with 25.46% of the units, 24.61% of the retail dollars. Marvel, of course, beat them by a fairly wide margin, with 52.68% of the units, 54.08% of the dollars, and that works out to about 3.4 million units. So they're doing literally about twice as well as DC. And I've got to think this is one of the many things kind of motivating the rebirth, you know, initiative that they've got coming up from DC.
And to be semi-fair, not a particularly strong month in recent. Kind of this month for Marvel was slightly below their average for the last 12 months.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not like Marvel had a phenomenal month. DC just had a bad month.
Marvel, actually, from the numbers I'm looking at in column J on the top 300 comics breakdown history tab,
which is what I'm looking at,
is above their average.
Okay, well, I didn't average it, but I'm kind of looking at it. There's a few in the 4 millions. There's a couple in the high 2 millions right before this. There's, you know, 3.7 last. You know, they're kind of, essentially, it's the average for the last year.
I've got an overall average. I don't have a running average. If we compare their average for last year, that average is about 3.467, so about 3.5 million.
Yeah, which is right about where
they're at.
Yeah, right about where they're at.
Overall, they're averaging closer to about 3 million.
Okay.
So, I mean, above their average for the Final Order era, but down from last month. Again, January, you got to kind of expect that.
Yep.
Image had decent ish month with, let's see, 698,830 units. That's about 10.63% of the units, about 9.44% of the dollars. Dark Horse had about another roughly 2%, a little under by units, a little over by dollars. And IDW actually snuck in there right above that with a little over 3% by units and about 3.25%, a little over by dollars. And really, once you add up again the front half of preview publishers, we're talking, you know, 93.77% of the units and 93.47% of the dollars. So as we've talked about many times before, and no doubt we'll continue to talk about many times in the future, if you wonder why your retailer is mainly ordering from the front of previews, It's because that's, by and large, what people are buying.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be great if they could support other stuff, but it's got to be worthwhile for them to do it. And, you know, these days, the numbers just don't pan out that way. It's one of those cases where the industry is favoring the already successful, and it's hard to get a good foothold into the market. Although, as DC's shown, it's not hard to necessarily lose a foothold in the market. But, you know, we'll see again what happens with Rebirth and if that shakes things up. Now, if we go through the top 300, I've got a couple of notes by publishers. We'll start with a couple items at the top of the list, though, just because I'm sure everyone's curious how that Walking Dead 150 did.
Mm-hmm.
And it did top the list with 156,166 units. That's an increase of 138.77%. Over the previous issue sales of, let's see, 65,405 units. So yeah. It did really well.
Yeah, and as we kind of mentioned before we started, better than either of us kind of predicted. I think I threw out a number of 130 and you went, oh, I think that's a little high. And as it turns out, it was, you know, 155. So
I stand by my statement of it's still a little high. I think this is not going to have much of any carryover whatsoever.
Well, but as I said then, I based that number on what we saw with, you know, 175 and some of those other kind of anniversary issues. And, you know, those didn't carry over. Well, 100 certainly didn't carry over with the kind of number, but it did give it an overall boost for the next 10 to 15 issues.
Well, and it comes down to, you know, what do you want to get out of some of these issues? If you just want people sampling and stuff, and there's a lot to be said for that, you know, that's good. But on the other hand, I'd like to see something that's a little bit more representative of, not so much representative sales. I want to see if they get the bump that they're able to keep it. And if you go back, really, for most of the last 3 years with Walking Dead, it's been kind of hovering right around that 70,000 mark for the most part. A couple of things that have done well above it, for particular issues, you know, up to the 80,000. A few that have done, you know, up in the hundreds of thousands of units. Mm-hmm. But we're not really seeing quite the steady increase the series had had for a while. And of course, really, once you put a few of these things up here that are in the 400,000, you know, or 300,000 range, it kind of skews the chart and it makes it hard to see. It is having an upward trend a bit here and there.
Yep.
Really, over the last year, it's kind of leveled off a little below the 70,000 mark.
Yeah, which is interesting because at one point we talked, I'd say a year and a half, 2 years ago, we had conjectured that, you know, could it kind of match Batman and sustain over 100,000? And would it perennially always be just guaranteed to be in the top 10? And that didn't really kind of, from the point we said that on, if anything, it lost a little until more recently, you know, until this issue.
Yeah. Well, and one of the other ones that's interesting is a little ways down at rank 8 is Batman, number 48,
which
is at 100,962 units.
Which your prediction of 49 not cracking 100,000 is looking more and more possible.
Yeah. I certainly think with 50, you know, that'll bounce it back up.
And then rebirths and renumberings and everything, you know. They're going back, what, to 601 or something with that one?
No, actually, that one, the...
one gets a new number. It's Detective that goes back to the 600.
Actually, Detective's going back to 934, Action to 957.
Is it really that high?
Yes.
Wow.
Well,
I didn't think Detective was that close to Action. I thought there was a good 100 or two between them.
No. Action got a little bit of an advantage when it went weekly for about a year.
Oh, and it started 2 or 3 years earlier.
Yeah. And there have been a couple of times Detective or Batman, I think, has just shipped a little faster, too. So, again, you know, Batman, Walking Dead, big difference this time around with Walking Dead well in the lead. But I think both of these are anomalous cases. This is really the lowest we've seen Batman in four and a half years, thereabouts. 4 years, I guess. And, again, not the highest we've seen Walking Dead, but, like, the fourth highest. Number two rank, Secret Wars, number 9, final issue of that, 149,027 units. That was down 12.16% from the 8th issue. And sometimes we see an uptick on that last issue.
That delay it had to hurt that.
Oh, yeah. I think the delay killed whatever uptick it would have had. Yeah. This could have easily done another 20, 30,000 if it hadn't had the delay. You know, as it was, the things that were kind of setting up the status quo were things that I don't say we take for granted right now, but we've already gotten used to for a couple of months.
Yeah, and you already knew.
Yeah, there was no surprise. But really, Marvel had a lock, not just on the top 10, but damn near the top 25, other than Walking Dead, Batman, and at rank 24, Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 2 at 52,336 units.
Well, and I will say this, we went through months where we had, you know, top 10 all over 100,000, in some cases top 20. There were eight issues over 100,000, Batman being at the bottom of that. And then you had Vader and Uncanny X-Men at over 90. And then, you know, by rank 11, you're under 80. And by rank 12, you're at 65. So the drop-off is significant once you kind of get out of that top 10.
Let's look at it, though, from a DC perspective.
Okay.
Batman just barely over the 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the 52,000 we talked mm-hmm. about there. Rank number 30, Justice League of America number 7, 47,834 units.
Mm-hmm.
Rank number 37, we've got Detective Comics number 48, 45,110 units. Harley Quinn at rank 38, with issue number 24, 44,967 units. Nothing else over 400,000, or 40,000.
40,000.
Yeah. Five things over 40,000. That's not good. Again, this is one of the many things that may be motivating Rebirth. Now, you go down to rank 77. We've got Green Lantern Corps, Edge of Oblivion, number one. And the whole theory, ooh, a number one will get you good sales. 26,818 units.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not a great sign for a quote-unquote number one. And I'm going to put quotes around that number one. Because yeah, really,
I agree.
It's continuing the Lost Army storyline. Now, what's interesting also is with Rebirth, we're going to get Green Lanterns twice monthly, and that's the Green Lanterns title,
mm-hmm.
not to be confused with Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps twice
mm-hmm.
monthly.
Mm-hmm.
So, looking at some of these sales, now, obviously, a little higher on the list, we've actually got Green Lantern number 48, but frankly, not a whole lot higher on the list. It's at rank number 49 with 36,068 units.
Mm-hmm.
So between those two titles, we've got 62,886 units, and they're essentially between Green Lanterns and Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, going to go weekly.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a very interesting decision.
One of many. As a reader, I hate it. Okay?
Okay, how come?
The same reason, and it's funny, Nicholas J. on our forum post, you know, hey, we're too hard on Marvel, we're too hard on the gimmicks, it's working, it sells issues. I stand by everything I've said.
Mm-hmm.
Too many reboots, too many number ones, it's bad for the long-term success of the industry.
I agree entirely.
I still agree with that and stand by that. But as just the businessman, you know, doesn't read the books, just look at the numbers. I've been saying for years now, at least three or four, this is what Marvel does, and they're topping the industry. That's what you copy.
Yeah, if it's a winning game plan.
Yeah, exactly. And so I will continue to say the reader in me hates the idea of Rebirth and continuing number reboots and double shipping and all that stuff. You can't say it hasn't worked.
And I don't think we ever have said it doesn't work. We've said yep. we don't like it and we think it's bad for the industry,
yep.
which is very different than it doesn't work.
Which is why something I have screamed a little longer than I have that they should copy the Marvel system that confuses me about the Rebirth announcements, that kind of what we do know officially,
mm-hmm.
the $299 thing. I've said for years, Marvel is showing there's no difference between a $299 and a $399 book in sales. You don't get rewarded for making your books a dollar cheaper. You just don't. At least there is no quantifiable number that you can show that that's cheaper, that sells more books.
I think a higher price runs the risk of selling lower books, but a lower price does not do anything to correlate towards higher sales. I agree exactly. with that.
Which is why, and I've said it for years, at some point, there's, and I'm sure some accountant at Warner has said this, and, you know, whoever's in charge has been able to make the arguments that, you know, hey, you know, people buy more at lower prices. It helps. It, but there's a part of me that sees that, oh, we're going to, everything's going back to $299. And you're looking over at what the successful guys are doing. Oh, no. The part of me goes, no, everything should be $399. And half of them should be $499. And if it's not, particularly if it's the same content, you're literally just leaving money on the table.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I
think... Again, that's not the reader in me. That is just a pure looking at the numbers.
From a business point of view, from...
Yeah, from a completely dispassionate, what do the numbers say?
What the numbers are telling me is DC Comics are not selling.
Yes.
They need to compete however they can.
Yes.
And competing on lower price is a viable way for them to compete. Is it the best way? No. Obviously, the best way would be to have better content. But
I'd argue that's not even true. Obviously, it's very, very, very subjective. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, and now that I'm reading a lot more Marvel and reading a lot less DC, I cannot tell you I see a substantial quality difference in the top half of the two universes.
I feel differently. I feel I see a okay. definite. Yeah.
And again, I understand that's totally subjective.
I think just from again, my subjective viewpoint, because you're right, it is totally subjective. I think they tend to put higher quality creators, by and large, on their books over at Marvel mm-hmm. than we're seeing at DC. And I think that they're embracing their history a lot more over at Marvel.
Yes, that I agree with, which in some ways is a change.
Yes, absolutely. There have been times at Marvel.
It's been the exact opposite.
Yeah, they've just disavowed their history. It's like, continuity doesn't matter.
And you know, and DC was the history company for years.
Yeah.
Decades.
DC is floundering.
Yes.
So if I were over at DC, I would be doing whatever I can to lower the barrier to entry and any possible objection somebody might have to buying a DC book. So
I agree with that.
Lower the price.
I agree. In theory, that sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we've got $3.99 kind of became fairly common, if not the norm, 4 to 5 years ago now.
I agree with that.
We've watched different companies try lowering prices, and we have not seen it succeed, including DC themselves.
I think DC, though, is doing it in combination with going twice monthly on some books.
Mm-hmm.
And if they didn't do that, if they said we're raising the price or keeping it at $3.99 and going twice monthly, people would bail, more so than they already are.
That,
I don't think they have a choice but again, to lower the price.
That is a emotional reader sentiment that I agree with.
I disagree.
But it's not one the number. Marvel went all $3.99, half $4.99, and double shipping. And they've been killing them since.
On successful books. DC is doing it from not a position of strength. They're doing it from, frankly, a position of weakness. Books over 40,000 units.
At the moment.
Yes.
You cannot convince me inherently that Avengers and Silver Surfer and Ant-Man and, you know, even the bigger names, the Hulk, Iron Man, Thor, Cap, are inherently more successful creations than the Trinity, Green Lantern, Flash, even the lower tier characters, your Firestorms, your Hawkmans, your whatever, since, you know, I threw in characters like Ant-Man and the Silver Surfer. That's a tough sell.
And nor would I try to make that argument. The argument I would make is not that I have to sell you on any of that,
mm-hmm.
but look at what the current comic book buying audience is gravitating towards.
Yes.
Nearly the top 25 entirely was almost all Marvel.
Yes.
And that includes Doctor Strange, Captain Marvel, and some of those lower Silver Surfer, some of those arguably lower rung characters.
Yep.
So DC's got to get their foot back, you know, into that area of the list.
I agree.
They've got to step up their game all the way around.
I agree with everything you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an emotional part of me that wants to agree on the lower price thing.
I've
got 5 years of numbers that tell me the lower price doesn't help.
I'm not saying it helps.
I'm also saying I've got 5 years of numbers that tell me it doesn't hurt even. Higher prices don't hurt.
I think higher price and increased frequency are kind of force multipliers. If you're enjoying the book, hey, it doesn't really matter, a higher price. It's more frequent. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
If you're thinking about getting off the book, they'll push you off. And right now, they got more people leaving books than going on books at DC.
Mm-hmm.
So I think competing on price is not a good strategy, and I don't think it's their only strategy, but I think they're having to do it, and that they're essentially, to a degree, trying to buy goodwill. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're the affordable company.
Which, like I said, they spent the better part of the last 5.5 years doing, and it bought them none.
Well, but it wasn't the only thing they did. They also threw the baby out with the bathwater. Now, since they've done the, hey, we've got this bold new direction, and it didn't really pan out, oh, we're going back to basics. We're going to re-embrace our history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the pendulum is swinging. But until they can get something where they're competing on more even footing with Marvel, they've got to do, I think, whatever they can to remove reasons for people to say, oh, I'm not going to stay on this book, or I'm not going to get on this book. Now, do I think competing on price is again, a good move? No. But I think they kind of don't really have a whole lot of choice in the matter. Because if they were to roll this out and say, you know what, I know we're only doing, 62,000, 63,000 units on, you know, a month of Green Lantern Corps and whatever. We're going to go double down on that and do it essentially weekly, and we're going to do it at $3.99.
Mm-hmm.
Sales would plummet. Mainly because it's people don't, I think, currently have the faith in DC.
But like I said, I mean, you're not talking that long ago. And to be fair, in some ways, you look at these numbers, it's getting back there. There's a time not that long ago, books like Iron Man were doing the same thing.
Yes.
And that's exactly what they did. Renumber it every 6 months, double ship it at $3.99. Literally, if you copy the exact strategy Marvel took on a book like Iron Man, you kind of can equate Iron Man and Green Lantern, it's kind of where you're at.
I guess I think Marvel's had a better track record of following through on the new runs. Even if they only last, you know, a year or so, they have enough momentum behind them to be viable that long. Whereas I think there's a high level of apathy around the DC stuff, and a lot of why should we believe this is going to be any different than the new 52 or 1 year later or any of the other things they've done over the years.
I completely agree. And this goes back to something we talked about several months ago.
Mm-hmm.
That I think the best thing DC could do is hire a marketing firm.
Yes, I agree with that.
Because there is nothing, and I could be wrong, but there is nothing I can see in the quality of the characters. We can argue about the quality of the books.
I think that
is inherently so superior over at the competition.
I think arguing that a property is better or worse than another one is a fool's errand.
I agree.
The proof of the pudding of that is down at rank 109.
Mm-hmm.
Archie number 5 doing 20,677 units.
Mm-hmm.
5 issues in, still dropping, but they've also had 3 artists. So we'll see if the new artist, the regular artist, is going to stabilize sales some. But, I mean, Archie has been around really as long as any of these characters. It's a 75-year-old property. And you could argue, oh, people don't care about it. Oh, superheroes are dominant. Oh, people hate superheroes. You know, you could argue whatever you want. The bottom line is they've made a game-changing move on that, and it's become relevant.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not about to get into any kind of debate as to, you know, is Iron Man or Green Lantern or any of these properties better or more marketable or whatever. The bottom line is how well can you execute on the property? But even with that, it doesn't matter because I think, to your point, DC's announcement of Rebirth proves they need a better marketing firm if they even have one now. The whole bit on, it's Rebirth. Okay, what the hell is that? A few weeks later, people are having to speculate because all they've got is a blue curtain and the word Rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, maybe it's a reboot. That's actually a fairly reasonable guess. They've done it before. Again, Flashpoint. And then to have what I considered a little bit of a snarky comeback, it's not a reboot and it never was. Well, dude, don't slap us in the face. We were guessing because you didn't tell us anything. They could have had a marketing firm find a way to tease and deliver that kind of a message a lot more gracefully than they did. And in combination with Rebirth coming out, they're doing a few other moves that just puzzle me. We're getting Titans Rebirth. We're going to get both a Titans and a Teen Titans series.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a Teen Titans series right now. That is doing, what is that doing?
It's way down there.
Well, Titans Hunt number 4 did 23,578 units.
And I don't, and that's not the one I think of.
No, Titan 16 is a little above it. It did 24,200 units. Now, what's interesting about Titan's Hunt, 12-issue limited series that's ending at issue 8.
Yes.
Now, between those two, again, 24,000 units, and they're basically going to, you know, keep going with this stuff. Now, I think both Titans and Teen Titans are going to ship monthly, so it's not like they're doubling down on this.
Okay.
But that, Batgirl's doing around 27,000. Mm-hmm. They're going with both Batgirl and Batgirl Birds of Prey. Again, I don't think either of those are monthly, but it's like, do we need two Batgirl titles? Cyborg, it's doing under 19,000 and it's going twice monthly.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, really? Gotham Academy, it's doing around 15,000 and it's continuing after Rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of these, Gotham Academy, it's like, maybe just cut the cord and move on. And I just, again, truncating a limited series, you know, from 12 to 8 and doing so kind of quietly doesn't, you know, really please me. And it just seems a little, I don't say underhanded, but it makes me question how far in advance Rebirth was planned in some of these things. I mean, first off, they should never have greenlit a 12-issue limited series at DC. It's just they don't have a good track record with those these days.
But I agree with all of what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
But again, taking, you know, kind of, I don't want to put this, taking individual side taking, and to be fair, if you have a side, it's probably more DC than Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm clearly that way. But trying to eliminate all that, same thing can be said for, there's a bunch of Marvel books in the same area. Books like Illuminati, books like Star-Lord, books like Nova, books like Spider-Woman, Scarlet Witch, all new Inhumans, Astonishing Ant-Man. These are all in the 22, 23, 24,000 range. Again, all of them in the same range, they're still double shipping and renumbering all of those books constantly. Inhumans, we were told we're going to replace the X-Men a year ago, and that hadn't really worked. And again, if you take the names off the books and the companies off the books,
mm-hmm.
and try to look at it that way, just give them a, you know, just book A, B, C, D, whatever, you could make that exact same argument for many of these same Marvel books, and they do the same strategy.
I guess.
Renumber it, bring out another one, just keep, you know.
Well, it's one thing to renumber and just keep going with it and stuff and get the fall sales bump. But what we're seeing here is DC is continuing with things that aren't working and in some cases doubling down their bet on it. I mean, to go with a book under 19,000, which frankly is cancellation level at Marvel and not so much at DC, they'll go another 10,000 below it.
Mm-hmm.
But say, oh, if only it was coming out more frequently, that would solve the problem. Mm-hmm. Now, again, maybe they're changing creative team. Maybe they're re-embracing past aspects of the character. Or, yeah. I don't know.
Well, again, but we've seen. But again, the theory that, oh, do we need this many of X character? I would argue Marvel has done. We watched 3 years of Marvel doing this with mid-tier to, in some cases, even top-tier X characters.
Well,
we've watched the churn: Storm, Beast, Magneto, mm-hmm. Nightcrawler, all these books. Same thing, and they just, well, try a different one. We're still going to keep the double shipping, still going to keep $3.99, and, you know, we'll run 6-8 issues of it, and then try the next one.
I'm not trying to suggest these problems are unique to DC.
No, and they're not, and the argument that Marvel's doing so much better, if you copy the strategy, which in theory is one way to go about, hey, this is what's working in the marketplace, so we should try to do something similar.
I guess to me, some of the difference is the creative teams they're putting on some of those books. Sure, they're doing another Black Widow book, and geez, based on the last one, does that make sense? Well, you're putting Samney and Wade on it. They were at least critical darlings on Daredevil, so maybe that does make sense.
Okay.
You know, granted, we don't know who's going to be doing any of these books for Rebirth, so it's hard to know if it's just shuffling deck chairs on the Titanic or actually getting in some really big names on the right titles lower names, but on the right titles.
I would argue, again, and this is almost a PR thing.
Mm-hmm.
You go back 3-4 years ago, kind of about the time Geoff Johns took himself out of major writing duties.
Mm-hmm.
DC has stuck to the same writers and artists as has Marvel in that same time period, for the most part. What DC has done a terrible job of is marketing those people.
Yes.
You know, you just brought up the name Chris Samney. fine artist. I like Chris Salmi. I think he's a great artist. But go back 4 or 5 years ago and tell he's that much better or different or stood out from a handful of the guys doing the mid-tier DC books at the time? No, but today we know his name and we don't know theirs. And is it because his work has been that much better? Maybe.
I see.
They've just done a better job marketing him.
I think it's more the marketing. And it reminds me of a term that came out of, I forget if it was Valiant, Defiant, Broadway. It was one of the shooter ones. I think it was Valiant.
Okay.
But it was Knob Row.
Okay.
And it was basically referring to kind of their bullpen of artists and stuff.
Okay.
And how he was just going to basically turn them like a knob into superstars. I forget the exact phrasing, but it was something along those lines. And it came down to, do our books, we'll market you on our books, and we will turn you into big name people so people buy our books, was the gist of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what, you know, DC should be doing. They should be making stars out of the people on their books. And frankly, they're not.
I agree with that.
You know, so I agree with you entirely. And again, this goes back to your comment about if they had a really good marketing firm.
Yeah.
But I think the nature of certainly DC, less so at Marvel, is they want to market their characters, their properties, versus their work for hire creators.
Which is interesting, because arguably it doesn't work. And one of my favorite examples I love, because this one cracks me up to this day.
Mm-hmm.
I, other than reading Batman continuously, I was essentially out of comics when Brian Michael Bendis became a star.
Okay.
Since I have gotten back in, you know, started doing podcasts, going forums, all that, I would argue that while he is still considered a major creator and people are excited in theory when he's on a book, I virtually never hear anything good about his books when they come out. And to be fair, and again, I didn't read any of them for the most part, even up until very recently. But when I hear the name Bendis, mm-hmm. I think, oh, this is going to be super decompressed. Nothing's going to happen. Lots of talking heads. Because those are the only comments I hear over and over again from people either that love and or hate him.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know if we're just sticking with him. I don't know what the theory, you know, I can't, from a complete outsider, I can't tell you what makes that a superstar. But it clearly did.
I don't know that that was what made him a superstar so much as when he was doing some books, again, I'm going to say around early 2000, but I could be off by a couple of years on this. You know, the early Ultimate Spider-Man stuff, things of that nature, they sold top of the charts.
Absolutely.
Now, were they decompressed? Yes. But it was before decompression really kind of set in as, good Lord, everything's that way and nothing's ever getting done on any book.
And again, this is not a critique of Mr. Bendis. I honestly, when I say I haven't read most of his work, that is 100% true. And it could all be fabulous. But as an outsider observing, it's funny when you talk to comic fans or I hear from other comic fans, you name top five creators, his name comes up very often in that conversation. Yet every time I tell me about him, oh, his books are so slow, nothing ever happens. I'm like, what am I missing?
Well, I think it comes down to once somebody has gotten up to that A-list status, there's a certain inertia that stays with them on that.
Yeah.
And even if they're not really doing that many books or whatever, they were a superstar, so they are a superstar. And certain things fall out of favor. Stuff that was just really cutting edge at one point becomes passé or everybody's doing it. Yeah. So it's not like his writing has really changed that much necessarily over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But at one point, he was writing all the Avenger books when they were at the top of the charts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at one point, Marvel had stuff doing the over 100,000 for a year or two, mm-hmm. thanks to him on those books.
Yeah.
So it comes down to, and again, this goes once again back to the comment about marketing.
Yeah.
If DC were to focus, say, on Scott Snyder, it's Scott Snyder. Look what he's done for over 100,000 for over 4 years, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. You know, they could essentially almost bestow upon him the golden touch when he moves over to detective. Suddenly that should go up to 100,000. If it doesn't, this is Scott Snyder,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And it feels like he's the one that's got a touch of that.
Yes, but he's the only one that seems to have a touch of that at DC.
Yeah, and to be fair, he got it from Geoff Johns, and the genius move on their part with Geoff Johns when he had that and was writing four or five books was, I got an idea. Let's make him, put him on the board of directors and make it so he writes one book and it's late half the time.
Mm-hmm.
We went from a guy who was universally loved and putting out four and five books a month to putting out a book every 5 weeks, and all of a sudden he was somewhere between people were ambivalent about to downright disliked him.
Yeah. Well, and Geoff Johns is the chief creative officer for DC. I'm finding very interesting because, you know, the video I watched of him about Rebirth was, you know, he's worked with the creative teams. They're going back to the basics, embracing what's great about these characters, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he made Aquaman cool. He did great stuff on JSA, on Green Lantern, etc. Mm-hmm. And if he's charting the creative course, hey, essentially a weekly Green Lantern book between two titles, I'd be all for that. But you know what? I don't know who's writing it. I don't know if they're going to have the same ability to execute on the concepts that he did during Blackest Night and all of that other stuff. It's one thing to chart the course. It's another thing to have it executed well.
Yeah.
And that's where I think Marvel has been doing better than DC, allowing them to do more frequent books, charge higher prices, etc.
Well, and it's interesting. DC has tried this protege thing before,
mm-hmm.
of the superstars, and it hasn't worked. Whereas Marvel hasn't really done that. They've just found somebody different, and we're going to make them a star too. You know, Geoff Johns, J.T. Krull, was supposedly his best friend, protege. He was going to be the next thing. And people kind of universally rejected him.
I think that's
James Tynion IV with Snyder, kind of the same thing.
I think the protege is the wrong move.
It may be. But I'm just saying, it was one of those things that seemingly they tried, and that did not work for them.
Well, I think this is so-and-so's protege. Those
two guys come to mind.
No, and they're great examples. But I think it's also dooming them to failure. This is the Padawan. It's like, I don't want him. I want the damn Jedi.
Yeah.
Give me the expert. I don't want the second run. I don't want his assistant or the person learning off of him or whatever. And that's not to say that's what those guys were, but that's how it comes across.
Yes.
Versus if you had basically, hey, they popped out of the woodwork fully formed, they're brilliant, and their name is so-and-so, and we're handing the torch, they're going to run with it.
Yeah.
You know, that's different. And again, it goes down to how do you do the messaging. And DC has been fumbling with that.
Yep.
And it's hard for me not to be puzzled by the, we're going to embrace our past, when they're coming off runs of Batman and Superman that basically disavowed the past. Let's get Superman out of costume and basically have him a fugitive on the run to a degree. Let's have somebody else as Batman. You know, it's
Batman, I don't understand. Superman, since I am a fan that fits into this category, I didn't care for that Superman. But at least I understood it.
I want the classic.
And you then are part of a group of people that I think agrees with you.
I tend to be part of the group of people that agrees with me. It's funny how that works.
Yes. No, but you tend to be, there's clearly a group of people that want the classic Superman.
Well, and the question is that what we're going to get out of Rebirth or not?
Who knows? But I think Superman in particular is a very, very unique and very difficult character.
Absolutely.
And very, just an amazingly difficult character.
He's easier to write wrong than to write well. It's just a character that between the power level, the Boy Scout attitude.
Yes. I would argue he's easy to write mediocre. You can do the done-in-one monster of the week, the big boy scout saves the day.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty easy. Is that going to sell? Probably not. Is there a percentage of just classic Superman fans that will buy that forever? Yes. What gets very difficult is when you're trying to get away from that and do something, quote-unquote, more interesting. Then there's 900 ways to screw it up and probably only one or two ways to do it well. And they have found several of the 900 ways to screw it up, and they haven't found one of the ways to do it well yet.
Yes.
Well, which begs the question, maybe the answer is go back, Monster of the Week, Superman saves the day, and just kind of let it languish there for a while till you have a good strategy for something else.
Well, and I'm hoping they've got a good strategy with Rebirth. It's just, you know, they need to.
Yeah.
But the other thing that makes the let's go back to the basics and recover our past history or whatever kind of interesting is down at rank 90 with Superman, Lois, and Clark, number 4.
Mm-hmm.
This is a title in which they've pretty much, this is the pre-Crisis or the pre-Flashpoint Superman.
Yes.
You know, and it's selling, 23,766 units. And granted, this particular issue is up about 9-10%.
This is another problem, and this is a much more recent problem, I'd say, of the last year or two. There's 8 Superman books with 6.5 different Supermen.
Yes.
So I don't know who any of them are, and I'm not sure why I'm supposed to pick one over the other. What I do know is I don't want to read 6 where they're all different.
Well, and to me,
so you give up on all of them.
This goes towards, you know, is it better at Marvel or DC? And it's almost a pointless debate because they've got so many X-Men books and so many Avenger books at Marvel.
Yep.
I couldn't tell you which would be kind of the flagship title of either of those franchises right now.
Which is interesting. Once we kind of finish this and move on to Marvel, I've got some comments about the Avengers in particular.
Okay, let's move over to Marvel then.
All right. So for months, I have been saying, this Avengers, this came out as the number one and didn't do that well. It's the flagship one. And for the most part, I've been told, hang on. It's not really the flagship one. I would argue the flagship one's going to be the all new, all different.
Which isn't doing all that well.
It's 18 and 19, issues 3 and 4, at both of them in the 57,000 range. Exactly. We finally got to the flagship one, and we still don't have the one doing 100,000. Not even close. We only have the one doing 60,000.
Again, what is the flagship Avenger book right now? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's part of why these books are doing where they're doing is not only do I not know, but the answer I come up to, the answer you come up to, and everybody else may all be different.
Yeah.
And therefore, they're not getting the advantage of having a flagship book.
Yeah.
You know, that's unfortunate.
And there's a few others in here. You know, Star Wars is doing well. Everyone loves it. I have nothing more to say on that, other than they might be spreading themselves too thin. We don't need 12 to 20 Star Wars books a month.
Yeah, we're not quite at that point, but they're doing well with the franchise, and as long as they don't overextend it, they'll continue to do well with it.
Okay, so now let's move on to the rest of the Marvel books.
Okay.
Secret Wars, obviously, the end of the event, yada, yada, great. Next at rank 3, Spider-Man Deadpool number 1 at 133,800 and some.
Mm-hmm.
Doing very well. It's a number 1. Deadpool's an extremely popular character. The phenomenal success of the film is... I don't want to say it's a miracle, but it's close to a miracle.
I wouldn't go that far. I think it showed a lot of promise. It could have gone poorly. But they seem to have done exceedingly well in the movie. The character in the comics has been very popular for the last few years.
Yes.
So, you know, he may...
The movie... Here's the question. The movie shattered records.
Mm-hmm.
For both its rating...
Yep.
And its time of the year.
Yep.
The question is, could it have done better if they'd given it a prime summertime slot or Christmas spot? And they just didn't have faith in it. And so, of course, it shattered the February records and it shattered the R rating records. Is a whole different issue, actually, I would argue.
I think the answer to that is going to
be... Was it a summer movie they just released in February and that's why it did this well?
I don't think so.
Or was it a February movie that simply did better than any February movie has ever come close to?
I think the answer to that's going to be in the release date for the sequel.
Okay.
Do they try to do it the same time of year? Do they do it as a summer blockbuster? You know, I think that'll give us better insight as to what they really envision that being.
And the R rating issue is, and yes, the film is, I don't know if you've seen it.
I have not. My plan is to wait for the Blu-ray.
Yeah, knowing some of the things I know about you, squeamishness,
yep,
dislike of language, other things, while it's a good film, I don't think it's a great film. It's a good film. It's not, you know, it's not one of the best superhero movies ever made. So yeah, I wouldn't necessarily recommend to you personally run out and see it.
I'm going to see it at some point.
Exactly.
But it'll be on Blu-ray, and don't expect it the minute I get the Blu-ray either.
Yeah, exactly. The other issue is it's an action film.
Mm-hmm.
At its heart, it's an action film with a slight hint of comedy. This is, it's not really, it's a superhero film, but it's more a big action revenge movie. Think Die Hard, more than that type of film.
Okay.
The old story for decades with action movies is cut out whatever you need to avoid the R rating, because R rated films don't do as well as PG-13 rated films.
Mm.
And in many cases, there is, as a viewer, I often wonder what the difference between the two sometimes is. You know, the MPAA just kind of randomly gives out ratings and doesn't really explain them. And sometimes when you go back and you see it had an R, they cut out these 4 seconds and it became a PG-13. And you're like, those 4 seconds were not as bad as some of the things that ended up in the film. And how did that make that big a difference?
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see if that just changes the dynamic in Hollywood, is avoiding the argument that R-rated films don't do as well has been made for decades. The question is, in the last 10 to 15 years, do they not do as well because they inherently shrink their audience by being R-rated films? Or do they not do as well because anything that you think's going to do well, you do anything you can to avoid the R rating, thinking it won't do well?
Exactly. When does it become a self-fulfilling prophecy?
Exactly. So again, two interesting things, way off topic on what we were at, but yeah.
Well, it's interesting, though, because, again, Deadpool has been doing well in the comics, has done exceedingly well as a movie,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's why we've got the 9 True Believer Deadpool issues here for $1 each.
Yep.
And talk about good timing. If somebody sees the movie, loves it, and says, oh, I'd like more, and they see here's a whole bunch of stuff they can sample for a good introductory price, that could convert some people into comic book readers.
And they've still got those low introductory rates on Marvel Unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
And right now there's character spotlights and collections, and the front page, kind of the app and even the website version of Marvel Unlimited. If you saw the movie, you can go, hey, you know, give us your credit card. And for like a buck for the next 30 days, we've got hundreds of Deadpool books for you to read. And we're even break them into nice little collections and tell you what to read. I think it's doing wonders.
What do you think the odds are of getting a Deadpool cartoon for adults?
It's, to be honest, not something I know much about, and something that baffles me. I understand Cartoon Network and Adult Swim does exceedingly well.
I'm almost thinking something for Comedy Central, you know, late night or something.
Well, say Comedy Central or Cartoon Network, Adult Swim, same difference.
Yeah, same idea.
The adult cartoons, I completely baffle and mystify me, so I don't know. I think it's certainly worth a shot.
It just seems like when you've got successful movies, cartoons often follow.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a very interesting to see if it happens with Deadpool or not.
Nope. Anyway, so that's next on the Marvel list. Again, we're kind of skipping the Star Wars. Old Man Logan, number 1, rank 6, 104,361. It's a number 1. It's the only real Wolverine book out there.
It will go down.
It will go down, but again, fair enough. Now start coming some of the interesting ones. Uncanny X-Men. Again, arguably the flagship book of the X-Men universe.
Sounds reasonable, yeah.
93,252. Well, great sales.
You know, I'm gonna take that back. It sounds reasonable until I remember who's on that book, or who's in that book.
Okay, who's in that book?
That is basically Sabretooth, Mystique, Magneto. It almost looks like more of a villains of the X-Men book than an X-Men book.
Okay, but it got the Legacy Classic name.
Yes, but there was a point at which it definitely would not have.
Yeah, well, fair
and
enough.
if we look down a little further, because that's the first issue you're looking at there.
Yep. No, the second one is down here.
Yeah, it dropped by like 40% to 55,803 on that second issue.
Yes. Okay, so again, you're arguably your flagship book. And here's the thing. You make an interesting point when you say, I don't know what the flagship book is, because we finally got to the point where they're almost all out, and I've spent months going, boy, for the flagship Avengers book, that didn't do – well, that's not the flagship Avengers book. Same thing with the X-Men books. now we're kind of at a point where they're all out. One of them has to be the flagship, or there simply isn't one.
Well, and I think that's the point, is I don't think there is one.
Yeah.
Because it used to be pretty simple. It's like, well, you know, for the X-Men, whichever book pretty much has the majority of, say, Cyclops, Wolverine, Storm, you know, the classic core X-Men, well, that must be the main book.
And the one that had the words Uncanny on the cover.
Often, but not always. Sometimes it was just X-Men.
Okay.
Usually it would be Uncanny. With the Avengers, again, Cap, Thor, Iron Man, the main Avengers, whichever one has that, that must be the flagship book.
And arguably the one that was usually called Mighty or just the Avengers.
Usually it was just Avengers. Mighty, for the longest time, was a second-rate book.
Yes.
That was where they were putting Doc Henry Pym and his band of lesser-run Avengers. And don't get me wrong, I love the character, but it's like, yeah, he's not the flagship.
Something we talked about last month that I tend to think is potentially problematic. At rank 11, Amazing Spider-Man. And again, with 50,000 Spider-Man books, it's confusing, but again, old school guy, hasn't, you know, 6 months behind, haven't gotten to these yet. I'm assuming this is the flagship one.
Yes.
Issue 6, below 80,000 already.
Well, this is one where I think they've done a disservice by having, in addition to Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Man, mm-hmm. Spidey, mm-hmm. and half a dozen other similar-ish books, they've diluted it.
Yep, fair enough.
And some of them often come out all in the same week.
Yeah.
It's a bad move.
Yep.
You know, and again, I think this is a different set of problems than what DC has, but a very serious set of problems. Mm-hmm. Are you better off having a clear flagship book and then second-run books that are selling about half that, or blurring the lines as to what is or isn't the flagship, and everything sells just sort of mediocre or okay?
Yeah. So, again, number 6 down, well below where you'd expect. You know, at one point, Spider-Man was the book that could compete with Batman. It's kind of not in that category anymore.
For the longest time, though, the mid-70,000s is right about where it would do.
Yes, for a few years ago.
Well, I would say kind of overall. There was a period where it was doing better.
Yes.
But that was also a time where they were essentially doing Spider-Man events every other day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just one after another after another after another.
Mm-hmm.
So I think these are reasonable and kind of average sales for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that goes back most of the last decade.
Okay.
So is it selling where they would like it to be? Probably not. But I don't think they should be upset necessarily at sales over 70,000.
Yeah. But again, not spectacular.
No, that's a different title.
Which hasn't been published in a while, right?
I believe so.
Okay. A-Force number one, 65,000, doing fine. It's a number one. That's probably not staying anywhere near there.
No.
Okay.
I could see it going by half.
Okay. Mighty Thor number 3 at just over 60,000. I would actually argue this has been a bright spot. I think this particular run of Mighty Thor is doing better than history would tell us Thor normally should do. That seem fair?
I'm pulling up a chart to answer that question for me.
Well, and don't just look at the hard numbers. Once you take the Star Wars and the number ones out, this is essentially the second best-selling Marvel book, and it's on issue 3.
I think it's doing well, and I think they're telling good stories with it, and I think it's one that's easy to market.
Yep.
So I think that is to its benefit.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of,
Actually, this is one I want to actually give them credit for. This is one I want to say, this is doing really well. They should be very proud of this one.
Yeah, they should, because again, this is a title that often is doing about half this level.
Exactly. This is a book that can do 30,000 easily.
Yeah.
This can be Iron Man. So this book actually is one of the examples, one of the better ones. Deadpool, right on its heels, again, doing amazingly well. Has been for a couple of years. Great. Rocket Raccoon and Groot number one, just under 60,000. I'm surprised. Actually, I'm surprised it did that poorly for a first issue.
This is one of the ones where I think they've got too many Guardians of the Galaxy titles out.
Yeah.
We've got this, we've got Drax, we've got Star-Lord, we've got Guardians of the Galaxy, we've got Guardians of Infinity.
You got the team-up book.
Yeah. I think they've oversaturated this this group.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to hurt the sales on many of these titles.
Yeah. Right below it is the next issue of Deadpool, Deadpool 6. Both of them over 59,000, one kind of high 59,000s, one lower 59,000s. Again, Deadpool is doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
Silver Surfer number one, 57,632. Great. Really well done. This is Silver Surfer. There's no way issue 5-6 is anywhere near here, and there's probably no way issue 10 happens, right?
Well, I'm just thinking this is selling just so much better than the other Doctor Who titles.
I know you had made that point before that it's felt much more Who-ish than Silver Surfer-ish.
Oh, totally, totally. And, you know, it's selling, I'm doing the math real quick, about as well as... Actually, it's doing, I think, better than all of the Doctor Who ones put together.
Oh, yeah.
But
again, it's a number one issue, under 60. This is probably a high 20,000 book within a month or two. You're going to lose half on the next one and another 20%?
I was
on the third one?
My initial reaction was more 30,000.
Okay.
But I'm not going to say that the 20 is out of the realm.
Okay.
Doing a quick shot. Yeah, 20. It usually gravitates towards there pretty quick. If it's not if it's not under 30 by issue 5 or 6, I'll be surprised.
I'd be surprised it's not there by 3.
It's had other runs that have started roughly where this did, and it usually took until issue 5 or 6 to get under 30.
I agree.
So but I think, yeah.
They didn't used to drop as fast either.
The previous run was from 2014. So, it was the previous run.
Right. Then comes the Amazing Spider-Man point issue. Again, I actually think the fact that this is doing as well as it is somewhat of a credit to the still popularity of Amazing Spider-Man, even though I just said Amazing Spider-Man, I don't think it's doing as well as it could be. This could be one of the reasons it's not doing as well as it could be.
This is the miniseries disguised as part of a series.
Exactly.
This is one that I think if they continue this trend, they're going to taint the point issues substantially. More so than I think they already have.
Yeah, I was going to say, worse than it already is.
Well, this did over 50,000.
It did. At this point, go ahead.
This is something if they had named it as they should have, it would be doing around the 20,000.
Okay. Again, I don't think there's much in the way of reputation for the point issues to go lower. What I'm beginning to worry about is these will start hurting the titles that they are points of.
I think it'll happen both ways.
Yeah. At this point, I think just this existing is hurting Amazing Spider-Man more than the credibility of the point issues, which have very little credibility as it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Captain Marvel number one, 52.9. Great start. It's a number one again. Chances are that doesn't stay there. Chances are.
Probably not. What gives this an edge over previous Captain Marvel titles is any hardcore Alpha Flight fans might gravitate towards it, whereas they wouldn't have for previous Captain Marvel titles.
Okay.
But I mean hardcore Alpha Flight fans.
And based on the sales of the last time they tried to bring back Alpha Flight, there aren't that many of them.
True.
Doctor Strange number four, again, I think it's a bright spot. With the film coming out, with some of the things done with Ant-Man, I actually think Doctor Strange is doing better than it historically has or should have. And people seem to like this series. Again, I think this is an example of something they're doing really well.
I've got a little bit of a concern with this one because they've got an upcoming one shot to kick off the next storyline. It's going to somehow tie into like a Deadpool one shot. It could tie into other stuff going on with other Magic titles. I hope they don't, you know, upset the apple cart on this one.
Yep. And now we kind of get into, and again, I don't know what this says about Marvel or what this says about their competition. Now we get into what I would argue is the heart of the Marvel universe. And books that are still ranked 25, 27, 28, 29. You're still top 30, top 40 books. All New X-Men, Invincible Iron Man, Spider-Gwen, Extraordinary X-Men, Uncanny Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, Daredevil. You know, that's things above Totally Awesome Hulk. That's everything kind of in the top 40.
Mm-hmm.
However, these are all issues 5 or less, and they're all selling at lucky mid-50s, lower end, under 40,000.
Okay, issue 5 or less.
Yep.
Let's take a look at how many Marvel titles.
There aren't any because they just restarted the universe. I'll give them that.
I was going to say, yeah, two-digit numbers. I mean, you get out of the Star Wars stuff, you got nothing. The closest you come is Amazing Spider-Man 1.2. It's at least three characters.
No, you've got a couple of sixes. Yeah, you know, you got Deadpool 6. And yeah, okay. But my point is, at this point, once you get out of the number ones, the real honeymoon period, this is the core of the Marvel Universe. And again, I don't know if this says more about how Marvel's doing or how the industry, how well or not well Marvel's doing, or how well or not well the industry is doing. This is essentially ranked 25 to 40 in the list.
Well, the fact of the matter is...
And these are 30, you know, these are under 40,000 to 55,000. That's the core of the Marvel Universe right there.
Well, we're getting to a point where titles were almost in a perpetual honeymoon state.
Oh, yes.
Because things last so infrequently, it's like, oh, I loved that series of crap. It was just the arc. It's over. Oh, there's a new one, different creative team. Yeah. Or maybe it's the same creative team. It's like, wait, did I get issue two of this volume or three of that volume? It's, yeah.
And again, we can discuss, you know, you think this is, you know, the fact that this is essentially ranks 20 to 40. Is that a bad sign for the industry? Is that, wow, Marvel's really dominating the industry?
I'd say it's a bad sign.
None of these books are really doing that well. None of them are doing poor. You know, don't get me wrong. None of them are terrible.
But there are a lot of properties that aren't in that range either, that or above that range.
Exactly. Nothing. You know, nothing's up, you know.
But we don't have Captain America.
Yep.
What are some other big name Marvel titles that we would have expected to be in this area that either are lower or just not coming out right now?
Well, Captain America, the Sam Wilson, is not in there. Other than that, everything else not in there are derivatives and or lesser versions of the existing titles that we've already discussed. You've got Vision, Spidey, Silk, Ms. Marvel, Carnage, Howard the Duck, Contest of Champions, Guardians of Infinity, Hawkeye, Venom, Astonishing Ant-Man.
I guess I'm thinking if I had woken up having fallen asleep in the mid-80s.
Yes.
You know, there's no Fantastic Four, there's no Defenders, there's no New Mutants, but you've got enough other X-books, who cares?
Yeah, there's plenty of X-books.
Again, no Captain America, that's further down the list. It just feels like there's they've got higher profile properties.
Exactly.
That they could be doing. But, I mean, some of these, you know, Red Wolf, Venom, Space Knight, Web Warriors, does anyone really expect these to be around this time next year?
Well, yeah, and to be fair, now when you're getting into those books, you're in the low 70s. I mean...
mid-20s.
And I want to point out, just because something clearly happened here, Red Wolf number 2, even at rank 78, at retail rank, this is either ending up in a box somewhere, or they gave a ton away, and it's still rank 78.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we're going to see that maybe in one of the subscription boxes or something. I don't know.
Exactly. But it's only 28,000 total, which means if it's in a subscription box, it's in one of the smaller ones.
Yeah.
Loot crate.
No, absolutely not. I am curious what got it to that retail ranking, because that is way out of whack.
Yeah.
It should have been more like 74 or something than 130.
Yeah, it should have been exactly where all the rest of them around there are. Because it is a $3.99 cover price. You know, everything else is right in line with all the other Marvel books in this area.
Yeah.
Except that.
I mean, Marvel's got a lot of books that are doing just so-so, but they've got enough books doing well, and even the so-so books, people are talking positively about Marvel.
That's perception, that's marketing.
Yes, exactly. But they've got six books over 100K, they've got 16 in that 50 to 100K range. Now, again, you know, DC
But we went through them.
Those are
Star Wars and number ones.
But they're there.
Yes.
DC doesn't even have that.
Well, yeah, DC's got Batman, Marvel's got, what was the one that was sort of, Marvel's got a Deadpool book.
But, I mean, Marvel's got 9 books in the 40K to 50K range.
Yes.
12 in the 30 to 40K range.
Yep.
18 in the 20 to 30K range, which is a little surprising, but not as surprising as the 21 in the 10K to 20K range.
Yep.
Those are ones that, again, some of these are things like The True Believers and stuff like that. But I would expect Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, Illuminati, Drax, Moon Girl, World, Black Knight, Hercules, they're not long for this world.
Yeah. And again, I'm not necessarily saying there's a knock on Marvel. I'm not sure what I'm saying. All I'm saying is for the clear dominant force in the industry, the company that, you know, we looked at the breakdown, the company that's over 50%, again, yes, it's different, and yes, you got to give Marvel credit, and yes, they clearly make the sales on their Star Wars books. But once you get out of Star Wars and the final Secret Wars book and the number ones, nothing else is tremendously strong either.
But the strength Marvel seems to have, they spin plates really well.
Yes.
I mean, they're able to get the constant rotation of stuff. It doesn't feel like titles are getting, you know, rejected or failing or whatever. They're getting replaced, you know, but they're also trotting out different creative teams to you know, big fanfare and stuff when they come out. Mm-hmm. They've taken what comes across as failure at DC and celebrated as a success at Marvel at times.
And that's why I said marketing's the whole key.
Yes.
DC, when they canceled a couple of books after issue 10 or 11, were, yeah, oh God, they're failing. Whereas Marvel did the same thing, and everyone went, these are exciting new number ones. They're going to top the list.
Mm-hmm. Really, I think instead of getting creators from Marvel and making them exclusive at DC, which they've done with one or two, they need to do that with the marketing people. I mean, again, Marvel, anecdotally, people are more jazzed about the Marvel stuff than DC. Well, and it's certainly, like we said, not the characters. I mean, DC's running the gambit on TV fairly successfully.
Which brings up some interesting things. One of the things, and it's kind of way off topic, but have you seen Lucifer?
I have not. That's on the list to watch, but I have
actually not. I'm really enjoying it. It's doing really well.
Good.
How much of that doing really well is the fact that the X-Files is shocking people with how well it's doing, and it's bookend with it on Monday nights, which is coming to an end. But anyways, I really enjoy it. It's doing really well.
Question:
do you know if DC outright owns that character?
That was actually going to be my question to you. I don't know, and I'm curious how it plays in both with the Sandman stuff, but more importantly, the Constantine stuff. Is that a place where we might see Constantine again?
Uh-huh.
Because that would be a very interesting way to kind of almost backdoor it into the Arrowverse.
Was Constantine ever in that book?
I never read Lucifer. I am not well read on the Vertigo stuff.
Okay. It's funny, my wife enjoyed Sandman. I won't say loved Sandman. She enjoyed Sandman, not like some of the fans of that property.
Mm-hmm.
She was a fanatical fan of many of its minor characters that got spinoff series. She loved Lucifer. She loved Death. You know, she's unusual in that regard. But anyways, how do you bring that character in? Is there any way DC can spin that into something in the books?
They've got a new Lucifer series that started up.
Okay. And so then
they are publishing.
Do they need Neil Gaiman to do any of this?
No idea.
Yeah. And obviously they've got his blessing, at least to some degree, if they do.
Yeah. The fact that Marvel is selling better, yet DC is doing so well on the TV side of things, again, goes towards you can't argue it's the characters.
Yeah.
By the way, Lucifer number 2 did 12,497 units down at rank 163.
Yeah, it is.
So.
But Marvel's got the movies.
They've got the movies.
See what happens with the DC film when it comes out in a couple of weeks now.
Speaking of the movies,
mm-hmm.
If we go down to... How far down is it?
How far down?
Rank 161 and 167. This is Marvel's Captain America Civil War Prelude number 3 and 4. 12,827 for issue number 3. 11,115 for the fourth of four.
Okay.
These were ones that were kind of sort of adapting some Captain America stuff, some Iron Man stuff to kind of sort of set the scene for Civil War. I don't know what they were thinking publishing these. I like a decent comic book adaptation. I know it's going to be a subset or a slideshow version of the movie. I know they're going to not have all the cool lines. They're not going to have all the depth, all the substance, whatever. These were a train wreck.
Okay, and so which leads to the even... So if they're that bad, maybe that explains my question, which is the movie doesn't come out for another 3 months and the series already ended. Why'd you put them out then?
So you can have the collected edition at the bookstores.
Okay, that's a fair answer.
Now, I do think the guide to the Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff that they've been doing...
You said you thought was really good.
Yeah, I've been enjoying those. They could be a little better. They're more or less exactly what you would expect them to be. I'm expecting when they get finished, they will collect those into a trade or something, hopefully just a single trade. At rank 235, we've got the Captain America First Avenger one. It did 5,895
mm-hmm.
units. It's a handbook on a movie, etc. I wasn't expecting this to do gangbusters. But they've done... a fair number of the movies already for yep. them. So I expect
the movie characters.
Well, they're doing issues on the movies.
Mm, okay.
So sometimes
characters. Okay.
No, this is actually covering the characters from Captain America: First Avenger. But they've done another one on Captain America: Winter Soldier, or the different Thor movies, or Hulk, or whatever. Sometimes they're two movies to a book. And again, they're just handbook entries. But they compare and contrast sometimes the characters in the movie to the comics, which is kind of fun.
Since we're kind of down in this area, you want to mention rank 150. And again, we mentioned it last month. Thank you for those of us who told us what Rick and Morty was. Again, 14,603, essentially flat to issue 8, but higher than – this is another book that's still sort of kind of almost climbing.
Again, it was up 77 units. That counts as a climb to me.
Well, but it was down the exact. It's literally the exact issue 8 is also at 14,603, with the intervening one being at down 77 ish.
Fair point.
So, but again, still doing really well. Still love to see that. Right above it, Jupiter Circle number 3 at 14,631. Is this a timing issue? Is this people just kind of gotten sick of Millar? Is it
this isn't Jupiter's Legacy. This is Jupiter's Circle,
which is all part of the same, in theory, the same thing, right?
Yes and no. Jupiter's Legacy is about the spoiled grandkids or whatever of the heroes.
Okay.
This is back in time when those parents or grandparents are the heroes, and it's almost a subversive Super Friends sort of a situation.
Okay.
So it's, in my mind, got a bit of a different tone and style.
That may be true.
And it's kind of what's bridging the gap until they get Jupiter's Legacy kind of back on track.
Fair enough. But from an outsider, here's what I see from an outsider's view.
Mm-hmm.
Jupiter's, whichever it was, by Millar.
Mm-hmm.
The first one came out and did, what, over 200,000? And led the list and went, wow. We're now at a year and a half later doing issue 3 of essentially the book in that universe, and it's down here at rank 149, doing 14,000, and down almost 7% from the last issue.
The first Jupiter's Legacy did 105,437 units.
Okay.
The second issue did 48,217.
Okay.
And then it's since gone below 30,000.
Okay.
This
is below 15,000.
Jupiter's Circle, which again is kind of a prequel of sorts, started slightly higher than that Jupiter's Legacy ended off. 32,542, trail below 20,000. This is more or less picking up a little below where it left off and going down. So, yeah. It's one of those that if I were to literally connect the dots between the different titles, it would look like it's a single sales trend.
But a really, an even steeper than normal. This is 20 issues, what's gone from 100,000 to 14,000.
Nah, more like 12.
Making it even worse than I originally stated.
Yes, I'm not saying it's a good picture. I'm just trying to be accurate. Yeah, I think the magic is kind of worn off on that one. But also what we're getting isn't what I think people were originally wanting.
Yeah.
And this feels, not feels like, it literally is filler material until they get Jupiter's Legacy kind of back going again.
Yeah.
But also, Jupiter's Legacy came out in 2013, and the majority of this stuff came out in the last, 9 months.
Well, yeah, it's already the second series of this from just last year.
Yeah.
This is one of our beloved B titles.
Yep.
Another interesting one. I am 40 years old and appreciate nostalgia from slightly before me as much as anybody I know.
Mm-hmm.
Rank 156. Batman 66 meets the Man from U.N.C.L.E. Number 2 at 13,940. In theory, I'm almost the best you can hope for this book. And I who is this book written for? I'm glad, but I can't believe there's 14,000 people that want to read The Man from U.N.C.L.E. meets Batman.
Oh, I can't believe it either. And I think the sales of the third issue will prove me out.
I can't believe there's 14,000 people that remember The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Oh, I believe there is. That.
Okay.
Man from U.N.C.L.E., Girl from U.N.C.L.E., there's a certain, it's got there a following.
But that's an even older demographic than me and possibly older than you.
It was certainly not a property I was ever into, but I never got into the British Avengers stuff or really any of those British kind of spy things. Yeah.
Was terrible.
But I think there is an audience for it. I just don't know what the overlap between the Man from U.N.C.L.E. audience and the Batman 66 audience is. And what the cross-section or the Venn diagram of those two audiences and comic book readers are.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, this, I'm actually going to say it did better than I expected, but I'm shocked that was ever published.
Six-issue miniseries, I believe.
Yep.
So it's got another four. It will go towards probably 7,000 units by the end. I expect it to keep trailing off. I hope to be wrong. Hopefully it does better than that.
And I'm a huge Batman 66 guy. This is the first ones I haven't... These first two are the first two issues I haven't bought.
I got the
Batman 66 on them.
First issue, and that was enough for me. And I love the show.
But you weren't even a fan of the comic as it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's what I mean. It's an interesting cross-section, and I'm surprised it did as well as it did.
I think it's fun for them to do it, and, you know, people who are liking it hopefully are loving it, but, you know.
Other things that are kind of in this range, I want to... Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 10, 23, at 13,121. Is this just too old that the fan base has dissipated? Are they doing that for a job with it? I mean, when the Buffy comics first started after the show, wasn't it over 100,000?
Oh, it was one that was around the top 10, I believe.
Yeah. It was around the top 10, and the only reason it wasn't a top book is because that's when we were talking about earlier when Bendis was writing three Avengers books that were all over 100,000.
It started around the 120,000 mark, but that was back in 2007. By the time Season 8 played out in the beginning of 2010, it was below 50,000. Then Season 9 kicked in starting around, 36,448. That one petered out by the end of 2013 around 20,391. Then a few months, about 6 months later, Season 10 here started at 27,850. By and large, it's had a pretty steady downward trend, except for a spike back in, no pun intended, back in April, or no, not April, I'm sorry, October of 2014. I'm not sure what happened with that, but that was almost at 25,000.
A fan of the show. Did you ever read the book?
Yes.
Do you still read the book?
No.
Okay.
I don't know that I made it all the way through Season 8. Okay. Maybe I did and didn't pick up 9.
Was it bad? Is it just something that didn't translate? Again, you think this fan base has just dissipated? It's been a long time.
I think the fan base is not as strong, and they've moved on to other Joss Whedon projects, of which there have been quite a few.
Mm-hmm.
But even short-lived ones like Firefly have a fairly strong following. But is it strong enough and galvanized enough to support, you know, a comic series, and one that had a fairly different tone and style than the show? And I think part of what made Buffy work, at least for me, very charismatic actors delivering witty dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, there's something about watching those characters that was just fun to do that it doesn't pop off the page as well.
When it's been close to a decade.
Well, we've got nearly a decade's worth of comics right here.
Okay, fair enough. when Allison Hannigan moved on to How I Met Your Mother, and that show was on for 8-9 seasons, and it's been off the air already for another year, so.
Sarah Michelle Gellar has done Ringer. She's done Crazy Ones. Trying to think what other shows she's done in the meanwhile. And it's not like, I mean, yeah, it's been a long time.
So you're one of the three people that remembers Ringer. I'm impressed.
My sister watched it. I have.
Okay.
Although I liked her in the Crazy Ones. Of course,
I actually did too.
Robin Williams, hard to go wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
I think part of it is it didn't have the pacing of a standard Buffy season, and they were taking advantage of the, hey, we don't have a budget and special effects limitations, let's go crazy. Yeah. You know, and it, different writers than you would have had in the writer's room had they actually done another three seasons of Buffy.
Yeah.
So, but this was one that at one point was just, you know, either in or just outside the top 10. And has been slowly attriting ever since. It takes its toll. Now, again, that first season, that season 8, is where most of the loss was. That's where like 70,000 units of loss was. Whereas that season 9 lost 10, 20,000. And again, another 10, 20,000 on the current volume.
And as you pointed out, you'd say the brown coats are a more vibrant community. But to be fair, when those books come out, they don't do much better.
Agreed. But I see browncoat booths at most conventions I go to. Yeah. Maybe that's just there's a vibrant community here in Austin and whatnot. I think it's hard for some of this to translate for a Joss Whedon property onto the comic book page. Because I don't care how good your creative team is, they're not delivering the dialogue. They're printing the dialogue.
And the reading... The comedic timing that so much of that dialogue is based on cannot be translated on paper. Comics probably can do it better than prose, and they still really can't do it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a certain amount of stuff that you could just do on Buffy, on Firefly, or almost any of the other projects he's done that is just brilliant to watch. But if you were to read the script or do as faithful as a comic book adaptation as could possibly ever be done, it just wouldn't be the same. So I think that's a lot of what's happening here with Buffy. Plus, you know, it's 10 years later.
Yeah.
You know, name anything else that was being published in early 2007 that is still remotely like what it was back then. The only thing I can think of is Walking Dead.
Walking Dead.
Everything else, Marvel, DC, etc., not only have they revolumed a number of times, we're usually talking about literally a different character in the suit sometimes.
The other two I can think of are such bizarre cases, almost not to count. Usagi hasn't changed much since then.
Fair point. I had forgotten that. That would be a... But again, I think its strength is its consistency. That's one that, again, I wish more people would read. What was the other one you were thinking?
Knights of the Dinner Table, which I don't even think is... selling enough to make the list anymore.
Actually, I think it is. It is, I thought, further down. I thought I saw. It's actually below the top 300 now. It is at rank 375, so below the radar.
Down there.
It did 2,385 units for issue 227. Okay. The previous one that I have data for was at issue number 220, which did 2,439 units. And, man, that is just an interesting book because Jolly Blackburn is doing just tons of pages of comic material there that's kind of comic strip-ish but telling, you know, 20-page long stories or whatnot. And there's also a really good gaming magazine aspect to it as well.
Oh, it's a great gaming magazine.
I picked that issue, that series up for a year or two, maybe a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I ended up dropping it was I've never been big into Dungeons and Dragons or that genre of gaming, and it never really dealt enough with superhero science fiction or any of the other genres of gamings that I care for.
Mm-hmm.
If it had had a solid amount of stuff, every issue for, you know, a Champions or Champions-ish game, I'd probably still be going with it. Yeah. It's a heck of a value. You get, 100 pages or something, it seemed like. It was huge when I was getting it.
Yeah.
So it was, again, it's got a loyal audience, but I think it's also one that unless you know about it, you never see it and therefore don't know about it, if you know what I mean, and therefore it can't sell.
Well, yeah. If you know about it, you know about it, though. And I wonder if it gets distributed.
I'm sure it gets distributed through Alliance, Diamond's Gaming Company.
Exactly. And I wonder if those sales end up here or not.
I hope not, because I know at one point it was doing at least twice what it was doing now.
Yeah.
And I think it's also a matter, though, of role-playing games, pen and paper stuff, not where they once were, you know? I've got a bookcase that's got all kinds of Champions, GURPS, and other stuff, and it's just they've stopped showing those things or listing those things in the back of previews. Not that Diamond was ever good about shipping them on time. Just, again, different business model, and it didn't jive well with the way Diamond works. So I've kind of fallen out of that space.
As somebody who still does some tabletop gaming, I actually think it is, to some degree, coming back.
That's great to hear.
Only in the fact that, and when I say that, when I am at gaming stores, when I do some gaming with people at gaming stores or things like that, I'm seeing there's a younger... I used to be in the middle to kind of on the lower end of the age spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a dead zone of 8 or 10 years younger than me where there's almost no one.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a pretty good group again after that.
Good.
Of everything from high school kids to college kids currently. So I do think overall gaming is not dead.
I'm glad to hear that, because I think some of those are a lot of fun to play. I don't really have the time to sink into it, but also just the research and process junkie that I am.
Mm-hmm.
There's so few places you can find a really good book on different ways you could use super speed or different things a superhero hideout ought to have. You know, so just as reference books, I love a good gaming module.
You're a GURPS guy?
Again, I've got a full shelf on my bookcase over here that's got just tons of GURPS stuff.
Yeah, Steve Jackson games are always some of my favorites, too.
But, you know, I've got to admit, I was always have a soft spot for Champions and the stuff out of, Department of Justice or whatever it is that Steve Long and stuff. Yeah. Again, Hero Games and stuff.
Heroes, yeah.
Yeah. But, again, I've kind of fallen out of that space, and if somebody could point me towards the DCBS or In-Stock Trades equivalent for role-playing games, some gaming companies might benefit from that.
Yeah. Bloodshot Reborn.
Mm-hmm.
Any explanation? Are there shenanigans, or did it just increase that much? Because it increased that much.
That's one where they've started, I think, a new storyline with that issue. Is that the start of the Analog Man?
Couldn't tell you. Not reading it anymore, so.
Okay, hang on. Let me filter to
Valiant. Filter to Valiant, which overall, as a publisher, seems to have gotten some bumps.
Yeah, that's the start of the Analog Man storyline.
Okay.
So it's kind of, you know, move forward a little in time. It's almost an old man Logan take on the character.
Okay.
And then Faith, right, you know, is the top seller there with 22,019 units for the first issue there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think...
And XR got a slight bump, while some of the other books obviously did not do as well.
Yeah. I think Valiant is, again, we've talked about how they've rotated titles, how it's hard to keep track of what they're doing and stuff like that. I think a little clearer communication on what their game plan is and what's coming out could benefit them, but they're doing some good stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting is most of their books are doing below their average, because, again, they've got two that kind of, particularly that Faith, that skews the average.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which I love.
I think it's great.
You guys were a little tough on it, I thought, but I really enjoyed it.
Yes, I'm tough on a lot of things I read.
Oh, fair enough. And I'm not saying you were wrong. I'm just saying I think I enjoyed it more than you did.
Okay. Let's see. A couple other publishers I want to talk about real quick. Abstract Studio, Rachel Rising. It's doing just a little under 6,000 units.
Yeah, Terry Moore's bringing that to an end.
That's one that, again, has been going on long enough that just standard attrition starts to take its toll after time. Aftershock Comics has a couple of things on here. I'm not reading anything by them, and I'm curious if any of our listeners are and what they have to say about those books. I'm just kind of curious. The replica one sounds interesting, but again, I haven't really dived into. I think I may have picked the first issue up of Super Zero, actually.
Other than when you and Drew mentioned the company existing, I know nothing about them. So are these superheroes, or these horror? Well, they wouldn't be horror. You wouldn't even be talking about them. What are they?
Again, Super Zero seems to be kind of in the superhero genre of somebody wanting to be a superhero. Okay. Replica seems to be sci-fi. The others, I really couldn't tell you. I think they're doing a bunch of different genres.
Okay. Cause I just noticed the top-selling one, American Monster, sounds like it could be horror.
Yeah. So I think they're trying just a bunch of different things to see what works. And again, like I said, I've noticed them, but I haven't really paid too much attention, and I'm wondering if any of the listeners have. Another one that, I've read the Zero issue of and enjoyed, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers from Boom Studios. 41,042 units. That's almost half the top 300 unit sales for Boom. It's about 48.59% of their total unit sales in the top 300. So it did well for them.
It did extremely well, and that's a Zero issue.
I'm thinking I've heard reports of sales around the 100,000 mark for the first issue. So I'm curious to see how that does. In the March previews, they've got a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Pink mini series.
I saw that.
So, you know, this is one where the franchise has been going on for over 20 years. They've got 18, 19 different teams of Rangers they could do. There is a definite chance that if Boom wanted to, they could make kind of the Doctor Who play that Titan has done of just, you know, do multiple concurrent iterations at once.
Yeah.
And I think they could do so successfully. I think there's an audience for this, an all ages audience, actually. So, I hope they do well with it. I, you know, sometimes go over to Ranger Board, which is one of the forums for Power Ranger fans, and it's just a crazy active forum. So I know there's a lot of people that could be going, waiting for this and being interested in this. And if it does well, there's the whole Super Sentai franchise. They could double down not only on the 20 teams, but I mean, be doing here's the Japanese version of them kind of a deal. So it's something. What,
24 versions?
They're on season 23 or 24 now. Mighty Morphin Power Rangers went for 3 seasons, but there was also the Alien Power Rangers at the end of that. So I'd have to check my notes, do a little research. There's around 19 different teams of characters they could do. But then for the Super Sentai stuff, it's been going for 40 teams. So, I mean, there's a wealth of material they can draw on and make use of. And this is one that, man, I would love for them to do just a really cool, kind of a handbook to the Power Rangers.
Offline, I gotta talk to you.
Okay.
My 4-year-old has all of a sudden discovered the Power Rangers, and so I've seen my first few episodes ever recently.
I love the stuff. It's fun stuff. Some of it's hokey, some of it's silly, but it's got surprisingly good action choreography, and it's actually got, I think, more episodes than Doctor Who, or at least it will by the end of the season.
It is fairly, yes, the action choreography is fairly well done.
So, again, not for everybody, but I like it. And again, I think there's an audience there that hasn't been served in comics, and it's a property that I think translates well to comics.
Yeah.
Dark Horse, man, their average is right around 6,629 units. They've got just a diverse lineup, but really, they don't seem to have any real anchor title, at least in January. So I think they're doing fine. I think they've got a good lineup, but they don't have anything I can point to and say, wow, this is just amazing. Everybody's got to read this, or you know what I mean.
Well, you still got Hellboy.
Hmm.
I mean, if you're going to argue an anger title, and I believe it is their top-selling title, Hellboy Winter Special ranked 137 at 16,466.
Certainly, that's a strong property for them, always has been, and probably always will be.
Yeah.
But they don't have anything that is, again, like Faith was doing for Valiant, like, you know, the one that's just head and shoulders above everything else, the one everybody's talking about from them.
Yeah.
Or kind of like Back to the Future over at IDW. You know, that's doing well for them. I mean, IDW is another interesting case where they've just got a ton of just crazy diverse lineup from most of it being, again, licensed properties, but they've mitigated any risk there by the number of license holders they've got. They're doing a second miniseries for Back to the Future, a Citizen Brown one, I think, yep, tying into one of the games. So Back to the Future is doing well for them. They've extended it to ongoing. I'm wondering if they're going to be able to take advantage of the 50th anniversary of Star Trek and really kind of grow the Star Trek sales.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of interesting stuff from those companies. Fantagraphics, you know, below the top 300 this time, there are two issues of Hip Hop Family Tree.
Yep.
And they both seem to do, you know, I'm not going to say brilliantly because, again, they were below the top 300, but solidly, and seem to be kind of increasing in sales. Not by much.
Not my thing, but I will say this. For people that are into it, seemingly, and that are aware of the book, I have never heard a bad word about it.
It just seems like, you know, if it dropped after first, but yeah.
But if you're not interested in the history of of that style of music or whatever, it's not for you. But if you are in the least and you have discovered the book, I've never heard a bad word about it from anybody.
That's good to hear. I mean, I don't really follow much of anything Fantagraphics does. They're going to a different audience than I tend to be. But when I saw two of those on the list, issues 6 and 4 this time, and I was reading the solicitation blurb, I'm like, you know, I'm not into hip hop, but if I was, this actually sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah.
You know, so different kind of a thing. And if they're having success with it, great. Trying to think, those are the main things that kind of popped out at me. We've talked about a lot of the other stuff, DC, Marvel, whatever. One thing with Image, I'm hearing that they've got plans for an Image Plus magazine that I'm frankly a little confused about. It sounds like it's going to be included with Diamond Previews, but not, I mean, it's not going to replace their section in Previews, but will like somehow supplement it, kind of, sort of, but not quite like how the Marvel Previews does. And if you don't want to get Previews, you can get just this for like $1.99 retail price or something like that. They're going to serialize a Negan storyline for The Walking Dead over the first, I think, 12 issues of it. I guess trying to go for a collectability thing on it or whatever. Looks like they're trying to do something different for...
Didn't I hear DC was also getting the supplemental Previews?
Really?
I've heard several weird things like, yeah, it's interesting. Seems like, yes, several of the premier publishers, and again, I don't pre-order, so I don't follow it nearly as closely, but...
I like having a single catalog I can just go through and stuff, the Marvel ones, pro or con. I've got very strong opinions on how different publishers are using their space in Previews. Some I like, some I really, it's just, wow, this isn't working for me.
Yeah.
So if with Image doing that, I'm curious when that will kick in and what that will be like. I think the first one comes out in May for the July titles and such. And then if DC's doing the same, I mean, it would kind of annoy me to get Previews and have like 5 or 6 different supplemental magazines that go with it.
Yeah.
But if that's how it is, that's how it is. So looking at the price points this time around, geez, two-thirds, $3.99.
Can we, before we get to that, sure. I do want to ask you one thing.
Uh-huh.
Did I miss something? What happened to Dynamite? Is Dynamite this far out of favor? Or there's 3 things on the list, and they're ranked 105, 152, and 277.
Yeah, they've got an item at around 21,000, an item around 14,000, an item around 4,800.
And that's it.
Yeah, they're all over the map.
But is that all Dynamite's publishing anymore?
No, right? They've got other titles. They've got Doc Savage, which I'm actually enjoying.
Okay.
They've got about 2 dozen titles. Now, I don't know if...
So these are the only 3 Dynamite books that can crack into the top 300, which...
I would have to go through the sales, the shipping list, I mean, for January, and find out if other stuff shipped and just didn't place, or just didn't ship for whatever reason.
Yeah, I looked at that and I went, I mean, because in theory, if there is other stuff... There's only 3 books selling over 4,000.
Dynamite's lost its way. I mean, to me, obviously, that's clear.
Obviously, something happened.
But
looked at that and went, huh, what did I miss?
Are they that far off the rails is the question. Let me pull up real quick the 4 shipping lists for January. And, of course, it's all going to – geez, it's – everything in the comic and graphic novel section. Somewhere in there, the question is, are there things from Dynamite? And doing a quick parsing of that is going to be just about impossible, because I'm not reading enough from Dynamite to, at a glance, be able to pick those things out that quickly. I'm checking to see if, like, the Doc Savage one that I know they're doing is in there, and I'm not seeing it. Mm. So it may be that they just had a really light January in terms of releases.
Fair enough. Just back to the other thing, just because we mentioned it. DC Entertainment will celebrate the launch of the upcoming Rebirth Initiative by soliciting all comics on sale in June in a free standalone DC Previews catalog. The comic size catalog will be provided free to comic book specialty shops in quantities equal to double their Diamond Previews orders for the month.
So it sounds like a one-time thing, maybe?
DC Previews April 2006 will include all DC East solicitations for comics on sale in June. July hardcovers instead. DC collectible items. DC East solicitations will not be featured in the standard catalog. However, all items will appear on both the consumer and reseller order forms. This standalone catalog is for 1 month only.
Okay. I think it's a smart move at the beginning of Rebirth to do that kind of a promotional push.
Yeah.
I think they've got a lot they need to sell people on. That seems reasonable, but we'll see how well it's received. Again, on the price points. Man, two-thirds of the list, $3.99. 55 items at $2.99, 17 at $3.50, 10 at $4.99. We had 12 at $1. A lot of those were the Deadpool True Believer things. You go below the radar to the additional couple of items, it just kind of, you know, gets even worse. I think 75%+ were at $3.99.
Yeah.
Now, I would be a lot more dismayed about that if I didn't know about DC's plan to stay at $2.99. Flip side, they're going to go twice monthly on a number of books, so it may as well be $5.99 at that point for those books, but you'll at least get more content.
$5.98, you get to save a penny.
Ooh, wow. That'll go so far for me.
I want it.
But, again, we talked earlier about how the higher price doesn't necessarily hurt sales. I agree with that. Again, looking at the Marvel stuff, people are going to buy their stuff almost regardless of the price. I do think DC's making a smart move trying to compete on price, but I think that's a short-term approach, and you got to have the goods. If you don't have the content, who cares? But it allows them to put Marvel on the defensive, at least on the pricing point, and we'll see how that plays out. I don't think Marvel's going to back down. I don't think they're going to change what they're doing. They shouldn't. Nope. They don't need to. But it'll at least make for some interesting talking points for the companies.
I would like to, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but you know what? Marvel Unlimited's done it. I would like DC, who at one point felt like the leaders in digital, seem to have sort of lost that.
I think they're the leader on digital first by a wide margin, but I think in terms of digital in general, they are way behind, both in terms of the Digital Comics Unlimited from Marvel, but I would also argue the Marvel API. Having access to Marvel's data through a queryable interface to go power applications and just do research and stuff, that's something that DC can and should be competing on, because what better way to get people interested about your stuff than if you had a rich library of data? Hey, you like this, you should go check these other things out and let people build those apps for you.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing. Marvel's website does such a – where Marvel is still available through Comixology because of the free digital version and everything, their website is extremely integrated into its own digital platform, reader, sales tool, all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas DC, essentially, there's a link to open up Comixology, where DC just becomes one of the other 58 publishers, or how many ever it is. Whereas Marvel, you can stay on the Marvel site and be looking at nothing Marvel did. You know, yes, is there a way to filter on Comixology? Absolutely. But literally, if you're on Marvel.com, you can buy and read digital comics right there. Whereas if you're on DC's website, finding comics is a little harder than it is on Marvel's. And then if you go, oh, I'm interested, let me buy that, it's click a link to the Comixology main page, which then you gotta go, okay, which publisher was I looking, you know.
That's just a bad business move.
Yeah.
They should definitely allow you to buy the stuff there and allow you to buy it through Comixology without ever realizing there are other publishers out there.
Yep.
It's just smart business.
There is a DC app for iOS and Android that's essentially does that. It's a Comixology storefront that only has the DC comics in it, but to be fair, IDW has one, Simpsons, Bongo has, you know, it's not very unique, whereas Marvel's tends to be very unique with its own reader, own researchable tools, like you said, some other things too.
Well, and again, if you go to the Marvel site and you stay in their ecosystem,
yep,
that's better for Marvel.
Yep.
I think DC has some catching up to do, and I hope they start doing it. So anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
I'm good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify that you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the monthly question. The Diamond Order Index only goes two decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or as few as 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath logic and English language itself seem to work very differently there.